I'm Josh Hammer, and this is America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines affecting our country and our way of life. On today's show, we take a deep dive into the shocking guilty verdict yesterday in New York City of New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez. Maybe it's actually not so shocking. The evidence against him was fairly overwhelming, but still, that really was the big legal news of the day. Bob Menendez guilty on all 16 counts involving Egyptian and Qatari foreign corruption, acting as a foreign agent from the vaunted position of chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Absolutely astonishing stuff, a potential upheaval to the United States Senate, to say nothing of New Jersey politics itself. All that and more is the subject of today's deep dive. Then later on the show, in today's closing argument, the RNC continues in Milwaukee. Last night was the second night of the Republican National Convention. All sorts of speeches from Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Ted Cruz, Vivek Ramaswamy, you name it. A lot of big names were giving speeches last night. Vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance expected to address the convention this evening. I will talk about all of that and more in today's closing argument. We're going to talk about the RNC. But for now, as always, we open our show by going around the horn. We begin in California. On Tuesday, July 16th, California Governor Gavin Newsom signed into law the so-called Safety Act, the Support Academic Futures and Educators for Today's Youth Act. This was a pressing priority of gender ideologues and transgender activists. This was a law that will prohibit school districts from, quote, enacting forced outing policies with regard to their so-called gender identity, and it will provide, quote, resources for parents and students to manage conversations about gender and identity privately. If that sounds like Orwellian language to you, that's because it is emphatically Orwellian language. The purpose of the Safety Act, you should not mince any words here, is to put policies into place that will shield educators and teachers, and by educators and teachers, increasingly these days, we just mean indoctrinators and left-wing social activists who are there in the school. It will protect them from hiding the fact that the parents' children are now identifying as a different gender. In other words, it will not force anyone in the school to disclose the fact that Sally is now going by Harry or vice versa in the school. All of this is an effort to deny the parents their proper role in raising their children and to shield them from having knowledge of the most basic rudimentary facts as to what their children are thinking and saying and feeling and doing on a daily basis. It's horrific stuff. An absolutely appalling piece of legislation. Says everything you need to know about where the priorities of the gender ideology movement and the so-called LGBT movement are these days. The perhaps even more interesting thing was, in response to that, was Elon Musk announcing immediately in the aftermath of Gavin Newsom signing this law that he is going to uproot not just SpaceX, but he then said X itself, so Twitter. They are both going to uproot, and they are moving out of California. They are now leaving Hawthorne, California, which is where SpaceX is based, to go to Starbase, Texas. They are moving to Austin, Texas area, which is where Elon Musk has primarily been presiding for a while now. And he's had enough. He says very publicly that he's had enough. This issue, the transgender issue, is somewhat personal to Elon Musk, if you know anything about his story and his personal biography. Another kind of salvo shot across the bow fired America's ever roiling culture war from Gavin Newsom. And it already, when it comes to capital fleeing the state, seems to have dramatically backfired. Look, if you are a parent in California and you care about your children, I really don't know possibly what you are still doing there. Moving from California all the way east to Capitol Hill, one of the rumors that we have been discussing over the past few days in the aftermath of the horrific news in Butler, Pennsylvania on Saturday evening is whether or not the Biden palace intrigue, the possible coup of Joe Biden atop the Democratic national ticket, will possibly resurface now that this conversation is potentially on the open. It kind of died for a few days. Is it coming back? Is it not coming back there? As you know, over the past few weeks, Democrats have been freaking out. And as part of the mass freakout, you've had a lot of people say that they want there to be an early roll call vote so that Joe Biden is formally nominated to be the Democratic presidential nominee prior to the actual Democratic National Convention in Chicago itself, coming up in about a month's time. the debate that is currently circulating among congressional Democrats on Capitol Hill is that some people are saying that there is, quote, no legal justification for an early virtual roll call vote. They're saying, quote, we respectfully but emphatically request that you cancel any plans for an accelerated virtual roll call and further refrain from any extraordinary procedures that could be perceived as curtailing legitimate debate. So an interesting internal debate now going on Capitol Hill. It's worth noting that the chair of the DNC, Jamie Harrison, is saying, quote, the suggestion that the timeline for the virtual roll call has been accelerated is false. He's saying that it remains on schedule. So who knows? There's a lot of rumors flying right now. The legal point that I want to just make right now is that there's no kind of statutory or let alone constitutional provisions that would govern this particular conduct. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party are private entities for purposes of American civic and public and, more importantly, political life. And accordingly, they operate by their own internal procedures, and they are allowed to do essentially whatever they want when it comes to their own deadlines and their own timelines and how they go about selecting their nominee and all of that. It's really up to the party. This is not a situation where there is any kind of black letter law on the book or anything like that. So from a legal perspective, that's really the only point that I want to make. From a political perspective, I have to say that I just continue to derive great schadenfreude. I continue to just get a tremendous amount of joy out of the fact that the Democratic Party just continues to be publicly up in arms about their horrible predicament, for which they are themselves exclusively and entirely to blame. But I guess they will sort it out. Maybe they won't, but I suppose we will see. Moving on, going to Delaware, of all places. So one interesting possible ramification of the stunning Aileen Cannon dismissal of the Trump classified documents case in Florida, whereby she persuasively and conclusively argued that Jack Smith is not legally appointed as a special counsel. One of the possible ramifications that a lot of people were immediately glomming onto was whether or not this actually might lead to the dismissal of Hunter Biden's own charges in Delaware and his forthcoming separate trial on tax charges out in California. And the basic argument for this is because he also has a special counsel. He also has a special counsel there. It is David Weiss. Now, here's the key difference here. David Weiss is the U.S. attorney for the District of Delaware. David Weiss is a Senate-confirmed U.S. attorney. The legal argument that Hunter Biden's lawyers have made about David Weiss is that DOJ internal regulations do not permit the attorney general to tap a current active U.S. attorney as a so-called special counsel. But that is not justiciable. That is a matter internally for the DOJ. There is no cause of action there that an Article III federal court can possibly ascertain. If the DOJ is just willfully violating its own internal procedures, that is not a situation that a court can hear. Similarly, it's worth noting that DOJ internal procedures and their standard operating protocol also prohibit politicized prosecutions that could even have the possible public image, not even the actual effect, but could be possibly perceived as placing a thumb on the scale of a presidential election or any other high-profile election. That hasn't stopped the DOJ in the past, but you can't just run to court to make that claim. So that's a very different situation than what Donald Trump's lawyers successfully now argued in Judge Aileen Cannon's Fort Pierce, Florida federal courtroom, whereby they said that Jack Smith was not legally and constitutionally appointed under the Appointments Clause of Article 2 of the Constitution. That is a very different legal argument. So a lot of people that are saying that there are going to be effects from the Aileen Cannon dismissal for Hunter Biden, I think are misguided there. It may or may not be a good idea that the DOJ is violating its own internal procedures when it comes to having an active U.S. attorney, David Weiss, preside over the Hunter Biden prosecutions. You may or may not agree with that decision, but again, that is not a justiciable matter in court, and it is very different than what Donald Trump's lawyers argued in the Florida case pertaining to Jack Smith. That's it for today's Around the Horn segment. Up next in today's deep dive, Bob Menendez, guilty on all counts. Wow, wow, wow. What a shocking turn of events. I've got all the details when we come back.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez, who has been in that august body, once referred to as the world's greatest deliberative body of the United States Senate, he has been found guilty on all 16 counts pertaining to widespread corruption, specifically the counts involve bribery, extortion, wire fraud, obstruction of justice, and acting as a foreign agent for Egypt and Qatar in particular. Bob Menendez was doing all this, mind you, as the literal chair of the United States Senate Foreign Relations Committee. To say that this is a shocking development in the history of the United States Senate, I think would be something of an understatement. Now, as I tried to tell you over the course of this trial, the evidence against Bob Menendez was absolutely positively overwhelming. The prosecution spent literally seven whole weeks trotting out witnesses who were trying to tie together all the complex and interweaving parts of this sprawling corruption scandal. Essentially, what you had was Bob Menendez, along with two of his co-defendants, one of whom, Wael Hanna, is a wealthy businessman in New Jersey who was seeking to use Bob Menendez in order to get for him a certified monopoly when it comes to halal Islamic food certified exports to the country of Egypt. That was part of the scheme there. They were just taking money to do the bidding of the Egyptian and Qatari governments, but really especially Egypt, perhaps above all. And Egypt is an interesting country because Egypt is actually one of the largest recipients of U.S. annual foreign aid on a year-in, year-out basis. We have been doing that for a long time there. We view Egypt, for better or for worse, as being of great geostrategic importance when it comes to the Middle East. They control the Suez Canal. We want stability in Cairo. That money went away during the Muslim Brotherhood reign in Egypt during Mohamed Morsi back from 2011 to 2013, but it was resumed after President Sisi, who is, you know, something of a strong man, but at least a generally Western-aligned strong man, although the fact that there had been tunnels discovered on the Gaza-Egypt border in the Philadelphia corridor definitely throws a wrench into that description. But in any event, they have been giving Egypt foreign aid money, that is the United States, for a very long time now. And what they found back in September 2023, when this indictment against Bob Menendez was first unveiled, is hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash and literal gold bars stuffed in shoes and just generally hidden all throughout Bob Menendez's apartment. And as I tried to tell you, the leading argument that Bob Menendez's lawyers made here didn't even pass the laugh test. They basically argued that this was all due to the puppeteering, to the ventriloquist, the one who was actually controlling the puppet strings, which is Bob Menendez's wife, Nadine, who, by the way, is actually tragically going through late-stage breast cancer. She will be separately tried at some point later because she is now receiving and undergoing intensive medical treatment, so she cannot stand trial right now, but she has pleaded not guilty to this. But, I mean, what a ridiculous defense. How could you – you're literally coming into court and saying, sorry, it's not me. My wife did it. Are you kidding me? First of all, how is that possibly going to fly for your marriage? Hard to see how that one plays out well at home. Second of all, it's just ludicrous on its face. It actually came out during testimony that at his home in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, and then I guess their other home in the Washington, D.C. area, because Menendez has been in the swamp for a long time, Bob literally has a bell that he rings to summon his wife as if she is like a butler or a stooge. How utterly humiliating and degrading is that? Again, I don't want to get too in the weeds when it comes to their personal relationship or whatever that may entail there. But that was an excuse that simply never was going to fly. And then during closing arguments, Adam Fee, who was Bob Menendez's attorney, who argued the closing arguments here, basically tried to say that Bob Menendez did everything for his country's interest and he did nothing wrong whatsoever there. A ludicrous argument to make. At a bare minimum, if you want more credibility with a jury, what you should do in a situation like that is to concede that a lot of this actually looks bad, but to try to say that, you know, it doesn't actually fit the definition of the criminal statute here for XYZ, kind of intricate in the weeds legal reasons, the definition of a word here, a clause there, this sort of thing. But don't say that you did nothing wrong. The chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, there were witnesses from across the spectrum who came out there, former staffers, agents with the federal government, people who literally saw him dining in Morton's Steakhouse with his wife in Washington, D.C., with foreign actors there. I am hardly surprised at the way that this result came out, as I've tried to explain to you on the show for a while now. So the sentencing for Bob Menendez is now set for October 29th. The most serious charges here are extortion and wire fraud. Those carry a statutory maximum of 20 years in prison on each count. In total, Bob Menendez now faces a maximum of 222 years in prison if those terms are served consecutively. However, in a situation like this, those terms would almost assuredly run concurrently unless the prosecution pushes otherwise and the court deems otherwise, but probably not going to happen. In any event, sentencing October 29th, mark your calendars there. Awful stuff for Bob Menendez. Now the question is, what happens to his seat? Well, the New Jersey Democratic Party essentially abandoned Bob Menendez as soon as this indictment dropped in September 2023. Bob decided not to run for his seat, which is up this year. He decided not to rerun for that seat as a Democrat, which meant that you had a competitive primary for somewhat semi-open U.S. Senate seat in what is certainly a blue state. Maybe it's not the darkest blue state, but certainly a light blue state. But previously, prior to this, Bob Menendez has been planning to run as a third-party independent to try to keep his seat. That seems like an utterly ludicrous idea. I find it very hard to believe that they are actually going to continue with this bid at this point. And if you believe what his colleagues are saying at this point, then it seems like that is highly unlikely to happen as well. So previously, you'd be very hard-pressed prior to yesterday. You would have been hard-pressed to find high-ranking Democratic officials in the Congress to call for Bob Menendez to step down. But then you had seven senators yesterday, seven, who came out and immediately urged him to resign. Chuck Schumer, the Democratic majority leader in the U.S. Senate, he led this charge within minutes of the jury's verdict coming down. And then Jackie Rosen, actually, the Democrat from Nevada, she actually went even further. She reiterated not merely her call for Bob Menendez to resign, but said that, quote, if he refuses, he should be expelled. Now, constitutionally speaking, it takes a two-thirds majority in the U.S. Senate to expel a member. This is something that has not happened since the 19th century. Now, it is worth noting, I suppose, fairly recent situation there involving George Santos, the con artist from Long Island, who was expelled last December of 2023. So we will see if the U.S. Senate has what it takes to expel Bob Menendez if he does not resign. But at a bare minimum, dude, just at a barest of bare minimum, even if you don't resign, bow out of this race, for God's sake. I mean, what are you doing? As a conservative myself, I would prefer that Bob Menendez stay in the race for cynical reasons, if nothing else. But I have no idea what the dude is thinking if he actually decides to stay in the race on his own terms after this. That would just make no sense to me. But for now, Bob Menendez guilty on all 16 counts. I predicted this, and I'm hardly surprised, although that does not make it, frankly, any less shocking as just a visceral gut punch to the United States Senate. That's it for today's deep dive. Up next in today's closing argument, night two of the Republican National Convention is in the books. I'll discuss for you my take on what we heard last night and preview tonight's third night of the RNC. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Ready to elevate your everything shower? Meet Osea's new Undaria Algae Body Wash. This clinically tested pH-balanced formula uses plant-based ingredients to gently cleanse without stripping skin for a clean you can see and feel. Featuring the same iconic, uplifting citrusy fragrance as their best-selling body oil, Undaria Algae Body Wash transports you to a tropical paradise, indulging your skin and senses. The all-natural blend of grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin smells like summer all year round, while a nourishing, nutrient-rich formula of seaweed, glycerin, and oil infuses your shower with the healing power of the sea. Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Elevate your shower ritual with clean, clinically tested skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code SEAWEED at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SEAWEED.
Last night was the second night of the Republican National Convention. Heard all sorts of speeches from Trump's former primary competitors, Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis, all sorts of other speeches as well from Jim Justice, the governor of West Virginia, U.S. Senate candidate. You heard from Vivek Ramaswamy, another candidate there in the presidential primaries. We heard from really just a whole suite of A-list Republicans. There will be much more of that to come tonight. My big takeaway from last night, especially after the Nikki Haley speech in particular, because she has previously had some pretty harsh criticism for Donald Trump. But after the Haley and the DeSantis speeches in particular, hard not to think that the Republican Party is not very unified right now behind the Trump-Vance 2024 ticket. Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis have both endorsed now Donald Trump. For a while there, it was not entirely clear what Nikki Haley was going to do, but she obviously did decide a few months ago, I believe it was, made her final decision to actually go ahead and formally endorse Donald Trump. And they both reiterated that on stage last night. I thought Ron DeSantis' speech was excellent. He gave a very powerful address. Ted Cruz was well-spoken as well. And the convention just seems to be going generally pretty well so far, from what I can tell. This party is very unified, especially in the aftermath of the near assassination of President Donald Trump, unfathomable as that may be to speak about. And we will see what happens tonight. I know that I am personally very excited for the speech tonight of Vice Presidential nominee J.D. Vance. I think the J.D. is a fantastic speaker, and I can't wait to see what he says on the world stage tonight at the Republican National Convention. This party is deeply unified right now. There seems to be a buzz in the room. From what I can tell, it looks like a raucous time. I kind of wish I were there myself, to be honest with you. Maybe I'll go to the next one in a few years. But in any event, party seems to be in good shape right now. And let's see what comes in store tonight. By the way, one final speech that I'll note. I thought Sarah Huckabee Sanders gave a fantastic speech last night as well. I'm really quite a huge fan of hers. She is someone to clearly keep your eye on when it comes to the future of the Republican Party, one of the best governors in America right now. Was obviously a staunch defender of Donald Trump's in the White House when she was press secretary. She was one of my leading preferred picks for vice president, although J.D. Vance was my top pick, so got who I wanted, I suppose. But if they weren't going to go with J.D., I said that Sarah Huckabee Sanders would be a great choice. She gave a fantastic speech last night as well. Keep your eye on her when it comes to the future of the GOP, folks. That's it for today's episode of America on Trial with Josh Hammer. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. We'll be right back tomorrow morning. We'll be right back.